Okay, so I said yesterday that I had said in the episode before that I would finally get to the punchline that I wanted to get to in the previous podcast. I don't know. I might actually get to it today. I'll get to it when I want to. I was talking with Royu. And oh boy, I could talk. I'll tell you what, Royu is going places in his life. He is going places. But wherever I go, I find people. I don't have a problem finding friends. Like, I can go orbiting and I'll find people. Like, people say, you know, Jesse, where do you live? And I'm like, I don't really live. Earth is where I stay. I don't know. Maybe I should get my perspective sometime about eternity. Like the concept of having a home. Like, Gandalf was the Grey Pilgrim in Lord of the Rings. And Tolkien said that he never had a home. Gandalf was a nomad. Saruman took up Orthanc, that tower, that black tower, which was old. It was built by the same people that built Minas Tirith. And he just kind of occupied it, and that became his abode. But that was Saruman. Gandalf never had a home. 3,000 years, and he never had a home. Even the brown wizard, what was it? He showed up in The Hobbit, which was kind of nice to see him. I don't think he was in The Hobbit, but in the movie. That was nice. That was really nice to see some of that other stuff going on. But he had a home. He had a little hut that he lived in. Gandalf didn't have that. So, you know, the wandering wizard, I suppose he might have been called. But, you know, so here I am as an expat, whatever. It's like, well, you've got residency filing stuff, but do I actually have a place that I consider my home? I've got one of those in Taiwan. You know, I got like local places, but I don't. But like a building that I think belongs to me as much as I belong to it. No. If there's a building, a structure that I belong to, it's in New Jerusalem. Jesus probably has it mostly finished. And a lot of people, see, you start talking about heaven, that makes people creepy and uneasy and stuff. But see, most Sunday morning type Christians, for them, eternity is this dreamy thing where we make up and invent fiction that agrees with the Bible as much as we can conjecture as a means of giving us some sort of a false sense of useful hope. And they don't really say it that way, but that's what most Sunday morning-based Christian talk is about. And for me, my Jesus is too big to fit into the Sunday morning box, even if it's a mega box. And so, if you're not a Sunday morningite, that's a reference to mega church. Joel Osteen is the contemporary example of that. But I mean, there are many pastors and Christians who attend Sunday morning fellowships that I dearly love and that they help me become a better person. But I can't do the Sunday morning thing for a variety of reasons. It doesn't work. There's too much gossip, stupidity. It's the money thing, empty buildings. There's so much wrong with it. But that dreary, dreamy Sunday morning culture thing, this view of the next life as being this ethereal thing comes out of Sunday morning because they're so tied to the building. See, for me, the next life is a reality. Like, I genuinely wonder what level. I mean, it's 15,000 miles tall. It's a cube. New Jerusalem. And it's this floating city, and it doesn't have lights because God is in it and He shines, and there's never a nighttime. The city doesn't shut down, And arguably, Jesus said that the eye is the lamp of the body. Our bodies will glow, so your body will probably light up wherever you walk. So in the city itself will be this blazing ball of light when you look at it up in the sky. So like it will, as it passes over, it'll be like a second moon, like a second full moon, probably brighter. Like people will like, oh, you know, NJ's passing by overhead, so we can go work outside. You know, like that's going to be a thing after, you know, when Jesus shows up. So I genuinely wonder, like, what level, like, what floor I'm going to be on. I mean, it's 15,000 miles tall, so it's going to have to, I just wonder that. I I'm curious about that, but not too curious. It doesn't really distract me because it doesn't make a difference to the here and now, but I do wonder about that. Like, for me, heaven, quote unquote, the afterlife is a real palpable thing. And I have my curiosities about it. A lot of people, they've told themselves that that's not going to work. That's not going to happen. So I get over into my Avenue Guru stuff where I talk about, like, that's another thing that I'm launching soon. I start talking about where, you know, you've got to condition your mind and your thinking so that what you hope to achieve, you don't keep it this ethereal, unaccomplishable, unreachable thing. You've got to actually believe that you can do it. Not get all emotional and dreamy and lost in la-la land. It's got to be pragmatic. Like when you say, I'm going to go to the store, you actually believe you're going to be at the store in 15 minutes. And that needs to be every goal in life, including the afterlife. I have no idea how I got onto talking about that, but I was going to talk about accents. Now, before I do, be a chap and take some time and get to jesse.coffee and find out how to buy shirts. The Taiwan special introduction shirt is only going to be available during this quarter. Once the quarter passes, it won't be available for sale anymore, and it will be a different design that's on the shirt. And you can get it for like $35 or something. This is a great shirt. It was designed, the current one was, it's got the Guys logo on it. And the link will take you to guys.com. And it was designed, it's a very good quality shirt. It was designed for other good companies in America. And I'm not allowed to say which because it's inside baseball. I'm over here in Asia. So these are good shirts. It wasn't made for Armani or anything like that. Although this factory very well could make shirts for Armani. And if they did, I wouldn't tell you, but I'm telling you, I happen to not have heard the term Armani thrown around this factory. So this factory made some shirts, and it's a great, you know, go get one, be a chap. It says, because I have something to say about this or something like that on the back. Be a chap, go get one. Jesse.coffee. Poke around. You'll see all kinds of interesting stuff that's there. Now, where I've been going with all this accent stuff, I genuinely believe that I was going to learn Mandarin when I showed up here 10 years ago. It wasn't this academic study thing for me. I genuinely believed I was going to get it. No, I'll tell you what. I think I'm going to have to get to the punchline in the next episode, but I'll tell you right now where the punchline's going. Okay. All right. Okay. Glad you approve. All right. This southern accent that I've picked up, I picked up on purpose. I can do the Taipei correct Mandarin, not the pretentious Beijing. You got to listen to the other podcast where I talk about that previously. I've been talking about this for a few weeks. I picked up this southern accent on purpose. And the thing you've got to know, I'm going to save the majority of the punchline, but I'm going to give you some teaser for this so that you haven't been waiting. I'll get to it. See, southern Taiwan is hated by Beijing and Chiang Kai-shek's Nationalist Party, which is in Taiwan. Chiang Kai-shek's Nationalist Party in Taiwan is the house cat. They really believe they were going to reclaim all of mainland China. They were seated in Taipei, and they genuinely believed that they were going to defeat the communists and retake the mainland. It's like this little house cat that thinks that it's going to eat the humans that live in the house. Like, it's really, and it never does, and it's just cute and adorable, and the people keep it there knowing that the cat's plotting to eat them. Like, that's this, that's Chiang Kai-shek's party. It's mocked. It's Napoleon on his island with a puppet court there just to mock him. Napoleon, when he was in exile, he was given a court. He had courtiers, people that would tend to him, making him a mockery. Both times he was exiled. So this nationalist party from Chiang Kai-shek really believed this, and it's outright laughable. And they hated the South, where the original Taiwan language, Taiwanese, it's called, Tai. They've hated those people and that language more than any other group in Taiwan. They generally hated the whole thing because they were foreigners, for the most part. The nationalists, Chiang Kai-shek and his nationalists, the KMT, it's called, Kuomintang, they were from the mainland. And they came to this Taiwan place to run away, but Taiwan already had its culture. People came to Taiwan to get away from the mainland, just like people went to America to get away from Britain. Very, 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 very similar. And so in the South, Chiang Kai-shek, I mean, he hated those people. And Beijing especially hates the people in the South. Because there, in the South, is where the anti-China sentiment, and I say anti-China, it means anti-Chinese control. They don't hate China. They just recognize the fact that China's not running Taiwan, and Taiwan's a lot better than China is because of it, and they don't want any Chinese control at all. And that sentiment is strongest in the South, and here's the fun part. The political party that was dominant in the South now controls the legislature and the president's office, and the mayor from my southern city is the premier, like the super secretary, if you will, of American politics, of Taiwan. So that South thing has taken over the whole island, and Beijing doesn't like that. That the premier, he's a mayor from the South. Like, they really, that drives them nuts. Well, I've got the accent from the South, so just wait till someone from Beijing tries to talk to me.